Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Eu gosto dessa dança sensual que faz bumbum mexer, que faz bumbum mexer.
Now, a different kind of book interview on The Brian Lehrer Show, because my next guest has written a book about politics and global youth that comes complete with a playlist. Underneath me right now, Dança Sensual, a funk soundtrack to a Brazilian telenovela that is called A Mania for All Things Turkish in Brazil. Let's put that in context and hear a lot more with Columbia University International Affairs professor Hisham Aidi, author of Rebel Music, Race, Empire, and the New Muslim Youth Culture. Professor Aidi, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And let's enter through the song we were just listening to, then we'll pull back to the bigger picture. Why is that on your playlist?
That is on my playlist because in the last decade, there has been a mania in Brazil and other parts of Latin America, a craze for music and culture from the Middle East. And what I say in the book is that it actually reflects Lula and Rousseff and their cultural diplomacy towards the region.
The progressive presidents of Brazil.
Right, the left-leaning presidents who made it a point that they would not partake in the war on terror. They would not implement the region-wide Patriot Act that Rumsfeld was asking for. And instead, they made it a point to reach out to Muslim communities, to celebrate these Muslim communities and their cultures, to visit mosques and so on. And this cultural diplomacy had a cultural pop aspect to it, a cultural manifestation, and it was manifested in telenovelas and carnival and music and so on.
And listeners, we've put the Rebel Music playlist on our page. Hear it on your own time at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But let's stay right on that theme. Here's another one in which the Mideast meets Latin America. You call this a Lebanese-Cuban collaboration. Listen, folks, for the Latin intro and then the Middle Eastern vocal. So you really hear the Middle Eastern vocal and the Latin-Cuban arrangement.
Right. It's this very curious admixture of tropicalism and orientalism that became popular after 2002-2003 in Latin America. And this is partly, again, because of the rise of the left in Latin America, but also because a number of these heads of states who came to power made it a point to distance themselves from war on terror policies and claim solidarity with the developing world, with the Muslim world. And this was a cultural manifestation, all kinds of cultural diplomatic initiatives seen in telenovelas, seen in music, seen in collaborations such as this, Hanin Son.
And what exactly was that piece, and who's the artist?
Was Hanin y Su Son, which is a Cuban, it's a collaboration, a group from Havana and a group from Lebanon. Hanin is the vocalist, and Son Cubano from Havana.
And we'll hear more musical examples in a minute. But the subtitle of your book is Race, Empire, and the New Muslim Youth Culture. What is this new Muslim youth culture? Is it global rather than specific to different nations?
It is global. I'm particularly interested in the Muslim communities of Western Europe, North America, sort of these communities that have come under stress because of war and terror policies, pincered between, you know, conservative Islamist movements, surveillance states, and American power. Where do you go? And one of the things I argue is that Muslim youth today, questions of belonging, have been sharpened, heightened, and a number of these youth are gravitating towards the African diaspora, the cultures of the African diaspora, and the black freedom struggles of the New World. And so I begin the book in Crotona Park in the Bronx, talking about how kids will come from different France, from Germany, from Argentina, and so on, to visit the Bronx and to dip into the rich heritage of African-American Islam.
That was a great opening scene for the book. The Bronx, the summer of 2003, and you had this working-class kid from Marseille, France, discovering what you call the moral geography of his life in the Bronx.
Right. All teared up, choked up, talking about how, you know, hip-hop made my life. Hip-hop has connected us with, you know, similarly marginalized people from the, you know, the banlieues of Marseille, Paris, to, you know, Chicago and in South America. And so I talk about the role of hip-hop and how hip-hop has become more political in Muslim communities, and for that reason, governments are trying to regulate it. The French government primarily, but also other governments, Germany, Holland, and the U.S. More at the foreign policy level.
Regulate hip-hop?
Yes. France actually passed a law in 1994, the Droit Carignan, which limited the amount of American hip-hop that could be played on French airwaves. Their concern back then was Americanization. Their fear was English words creeping into the French language. Right? That was just 20 years ago. Today, they're more concerned about radicalism, leftism. And so they're trying to promote some hip-hop artists over others, right? And I talk in the book about how they're trying to marginalize people such as Medine, who are hard left, Black Power inspired, and promoting others.
And we're going to play an example of each, I think, in just a second. Again, my guest is Columbia University International Affairs Professor Hisham Aidi. His new book is Rebel Music, Race, Empire, and the New Muslim Youth Culture. And he sent us a list of 23 tracks that we might sample from to exemplify some of the music and cultural circumstances that he writes about in the book. You can see that whole playlist at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. I had so much fun listening last night and this morning to these tunes, many of which I did not know. And so you'll discover some great stuff for yourself if you're into world music. So this next track from your playlist is from the Kominas, who you call Pakistani-American punk rockers responding to the Bush-Blair-Musharraf policy of using Sufism for de-radicalization. You want to explain that before we play the clip?
Sure. After 9/11, 2003, the Rand Corporation, the Nixon Center, a number of think tanks in Washington, D.C. began producing reports, policy memos, arguing that the sources of the political violence directed at the U.S. are theological, religious, ideological. And what we should do to counter the Salafi movement, the Taliban, and so on, is mobilize folk Islam, Sufism, often described as the more mystical branch of Islam. And so this was the policy. National Intelligence Council would set up a program, $1.3 billion, called Transforming Islam from Within. And at the heart of this policy, which would be embraced not only by the U.S., but a number of governments sort of to counter ultra-conservative Islamists, was music. Music was at the heart of policy. Through music, you can disseminate Sufism. Through Sufi practice, Sufi culture, you can disseminate a more liberal Islam. So what – you want me to continue?
This is a response to that movement in music from the Pakistani-American punk rockers, the Kominas. Can you translate the lyrics here, and are they specifically relevant to what you were just describing?
Well, what they're talking about love and survival in Iraq and in Karbala, and they're singing in Punjabi, and these are three kids from Boston, anarchist punk rockers who, you know, they begin raising hell domestically, challenging conservative Muslim attitudes towards music, but then they go off and challenge the Musharraf government for exploiting the Sufi heritage for this.
The Kominas. So here's the flip side. Here's an example of what you were just describing that this is a reaction to. Abdul Malik with Gibraltar, and you call Abdul Malik a French Muslim rapper and Sufi spoken word artist considered moderate and celebrated by the French state.
Sur le détroit de Gibraltar, il y a un jeune noir qui pleure un rêve qui prendra vie une fois passé Gibraltar. Sur le détroit de Gibraltar, il y a un jeune noir qui se demande si l'histoire le retiendra comme celui qui portait le nom de cette montagne.
How's your French?
Pretty good.
What's he saying?
He's talking about how there's a young man on the Straits of Gibraltar, and this young man is at peace with himself, and he's basically narrating his life, right? This is Abdul Malik. 15, 20 years ago, he was a street hustler. Then he became an Islamist, joining a group called the Jamaat Tablighi. He had a successful rap career with a group called New African Poets, but then he became an Islamist, abandoned rap altogether. And then he had a Sufi conversion, right? A Sufi transformation. He becomes a Sufi and sort of becomes apolitical. And the music that he does is, as you see, jazz riffs, chanson française, and spoken word. And he's probably the most celebrated French rap artist of the last decade. The cultural establishment has embraced him, given him every award imaginable, because they see the music that he does as representative of a moderate Islam, an Islam that can be let into the public sphere.
But it's also an indication of how there is political diversity, cultural diversity within global Muslim youth when you take the song that we just heard and the one right before it.
Absolutely. And another thing to say is Abdel Malik is a great artist, but ever since he's been embraced by the French cultural establishment, he's lost the street, right? He's no longer, he was incredibly popular when he was with the New African Poets. But now that he's invited to the presidential palace and given all kinds of awards, he's seen as a top-down figure, right? Somebody imposed, an imposed artist.
How does he feel about that?
Well, you know, he's constantly battling with, you know, artists who are telling him he's lost his street cred. But he says, I represent the true spirit of Islamic reconciliation. And the Islam I represent is the one that's compatible with the French Republic's values.
Well, is there anything that you would call an indigenous Muslim youth protest music against the excesses of violent radical Islam? I mean, lots of Americans write protest songs about the excesses of, you know, American religious fundamentalism and American imperialism. There's British protest music by Brits, et cetera, against British state violence. What about a Muslim youth movement against Salafists and other radicals that doesn't have to be seen as top-down and promoted by the state?
Well, we were talking earlier about the Kuminas. The Kuminas were responding to Junoon, a Pakistani group, which was in effect doing just that, right? They were playing sort of indigenous, local, you know, they were playing rock mixed with Sufi poetry, responding to the Taliban.
Junoon's been on the show. Yeah,
yeah. Junoon was doing that.
Doing that.
Right, they were doing that. So they were seen as a protest group in the 1990s, right? When they were protesting the Nawaz Sharif government. But then Musharraf comes to power, and they become too close to him, right? And they become part of his Sufi agenda.
Uh-huh.
And that's when you get the Taqwa Corps and the Kuminas protesting against Junoon, who were seen as having lost their street credibility.
Hisham Aidi, Columbia University International Affairs professor, author of Rebel Music, Race, Empire, and the New Muslim Youth Culture. Here's a really unusual historical clip, something different from your playlist. It's a French-Algerian vaudeville tune from the 1930s. You want to set this up for us and tell us why you include it in relation to this book about contemporary culture?
Which one is this?
This is going to be, I'll tell you in a second, this is going to be Mohammed El Kamo.
Right, so that song, it's a hilarious song. It's called Tic Tic Tac, Mohamed El Kamal. Was an Algerian band leader, lived in France in the 1920s and 30s, just as Algerian migration increases after World War I. And he writes this track basically mixing, you know, the sounds of vaudeville, big band, rumba, with his Andalusian training, right? The music of, you know, Andalusia from North Africa. And he would write jingles, and this is one of the jingles, right? He writes a jingle about the invention of the telephone, being a carpet seller in Paris, and this is about his heart beating for his loved one.
Vintage 1930s.
يعمل تيك تيك تاك نحبك نعشق في زينك يا محلاك كي نشوف القلب يعمل تيك تيك تاك نحبك نعشق في زينك يا محلاك هبلت هبلتيني
تيك تيك تاك.
His heart is pounding.
For what?
For his loved one, right? His love is drowning him, and, you know, and so on.
So it's an example from that era of fusion?
It's an example of a number of things, right? It was actually French record owners who would go down to North Africa to the colonies and quote-unquote discover artists and then bring them back to perform at the World Expo in 1937 in Paris, a huge cultural phenomenon. And it is at the World Expo where Mohamed El Kamel meets Hamid Bashtarzi and Salim Hilali, and the three of them would go on to create an extraordinary sound that would change the sound of North Africa for decades to come, basically mixing Andalusi music, which was becoming the music of the nationalist movements in North Africa, mixing it with rumba and big band and so on, and triggering all kinds of debates.
And let's play a Salim Halali clip, because this will really scramble people's brains. This is the song My Yiddish Mama, sung in Arabic, and it's both authentically Arab and authentically Jewish. Set this up for us.
Right. Salim Halali, he was born in Annaba, Algeria. He boards a ship from Algiers to Marseille at the age of 14, dreaming of becoming a flamenco singer, singing flamenco in Arabic. He meets Mohamed El Kamel, who becomes his songwriter, and he would become a star in the Latin Quarter, singing in the cabarets there. And the song that you're about to hear, he did after the 67 War, right? A very difficult time when the Jewish communities of North Africa were leaving. And the song is based on the vaudeville song from the 1920s, which imagines an old, sort of the anxiety of assimilation and imagining life in the old world through a love for the Jewish mother. He does the same thing, but imagining sort of an Arabic-speaking past, sort of the end of this era of the Jewish communities of North Africa, the Arabic-speaking Jewish communities of North Africa.
My Yiddish mama, unlike you've heard it at your grandmother's wedding. I guess you weren't at your grandmother's wedding. Who's the audience? Who's applauding there?
The audience is largely North African migrants. Jews and Muslim, right? Who've left their homelands, given the post-colonial conflict of these regions. And this was also one of the earliest music videos done in France, right? And the reason I put them on the playlist is there's a revival. There's a very keen interest in the music of the North African Jews who migrated to France today.
By whom?
The younger generation, largely Muslims, who believe that the sounds of these exiled artists can help calm tensions in France today, can help calm some of the memory war, the memory competition taking place in Europe today.
How do you know all this music? Do you travel and collect? Are there radio station streams from around the world you listen to online? How do you know all this?
Yes, yes, and yes. I do travel. I do collect. I've been a crate digger for many years, and I was a DJ in my youth.
Does protest music have more political impact in some countries than others, either with the government or to frame the politics of youth culturally?
I think that when governments intervene, very often they can rob that protest music of its content. Right. So in countries that are more democratic and the state leaves these artists alone, they can have more of an impact.
Is freedom of speech an issue for the artists you write about, or any of them underground
sure.
in jail?
Absolutely, which is why why the internet has completely revolutionized the practice of music. A number of the rap artists I talk about, such as Medine, those considered radical. I mean, in every Western European state today, there's a good Muslim artist and a bad Muslim artist. And a number of those Muslim rappers who are considered radical and left-wing exist on the internet. It's technology that has liberated them.
What do you hope people take away from this book, bottom line?
The stories, I'm talking about genres and music from South America to South Asia, just to explain how diverse the Muslim community is, these Muslim communities are, the challenges that they're facing. And the book is about cultural policy and public diplomacy and the rise of social movements that are trying to deal with these rather punitive policies that are being directed at the Muslim community.
Hisham Aidi, Columbia University International Affairs Professor, now the author of Rebel Music, Race, Empire, and the New Muslim Youth Culture. Let's go out with one more clip from your playlist, a Belgian-American Congolese band you call one of the hottest acts on the Muslim hip-hop scene.
Yep.
What's this?
This is The Reminders, two individuals, Big Samir, who's Belgian-Congolese, moved to America, and Asia Black from Brooklyn, an amazing act. They've toured the world.
Thanks for the thoughts. Thanks for the tunes.
Thank you.
simple, even though pops was not around and mama had to struggle. Surviving in the ghetto, we hustle, that's universal. Like an international plague, it hit us in the middle of the body. My community's been torn apart. I was told if you want to change, you gotta start with the heart. Then you see clear both sides, light and dark. Time to make a decision, speed up or slow it down. We gotta find a solution before my people go.